Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. It's the evening of the second day, Kaf Dalas BeNisan Tashinayin Vav, the evening of the first day, Sunday, 1 May 2016, webcasting from the spiritual center of the world. I mean, it's the eternal spiritual center. Others come and go. For some 400 years, the sun never set on the globe encircling British Empire, but since the end of World War II, the British have shrunk back to their island kingdom and have inflicted on themselves an enemy population of Muslims within. And this may contribute to the burgeoning outbreaks of anti-Jewry in the UK. That was the top story in Israel today. One after the other, it seems, Labour MKs are coming out of the woodwork, or as a Labour MK West Streeting sadly said, it's like lifting up a stone and having insects crawl out. That's how he described the series of outbursts of anti-Jew hatred from members of the labor movement. A month ago, remember, Vicky Kirby, a branch manager, was suspended from the party for tweeting that Jews have big noses and Hitler was the god of the Zionists. 2 months ago, the head of the student labor group at Oxford University resigned in response to the burgeoning anti-Semitism there. He said the left has a problem with Jews. And then we have this M.K. Naz Shar saying the Jews in Israel must be transferred to the United States. And, of course, former London Mayor Ken Livingstone, who seemed to say Hitler liked the Zionists and thereby smeared Zionism with racism, with Nazism. Last week at the UN as well, the PLO representative Riyad Mansour called a press conference to tongue-lash Israel for calling all the Palestinian people who have legitimate rights to resist the occupation in legitimate ways, terrorists. He, too, would link Israel to Nazi Germany and the Palestinian Freedom Fighters he likened to Jews fighting the Nazis in the Warsaw Ghetto. And once again, we see the inherent thievery of Arab culture. As the Quran is a plagiarized, stolen copy of the Torah, so all the imagery here in this story is Jewish history, too, stolen and twisted like the Quran. The smearing of Jews with the behaviors of Nazis is simply delusional. There's no comparison whatsoever. Like the delusion that Israel is an apartheid society when that was all about skin color and Israel has no such laws. Anti-Semitism in all generations is expressed in lies. False accusations of Jews committing crimes they don't commit. There is this need out there at this time for anti-Jews, addicted to the hatred, to double down on calling Israelis Nazis. Not that this is new. In my book, I show how Time magazine, in its first cover story on the new state of Israel in August of 1948, insinuated that these new Israelis were in the Prussian mode. Hint, hint, wink, wink. The new Jewish soldiers were the local version of Nazi stormtroopers in their conquest of the Arabians. The war for Israel is a war on several fronts at the same time, several dimensions. One is for Israel's safety, physical safety, threatened by 550 million people on three sides, most of them Muslims, whose religion is a form of anti-Semitism. It's also a war for civilization, against barbarism, which leftists refuse to admit still exists. There are cultures out there that still deserve the classification barbaric. And for sure, Islam deserves that name with its head choppings and hand choppings, and the capture of non-Muslims and using them as sex toys, girls and boys alike. Islam, whose highest scholars in Al-Azhar and Cairo have yet to denounce ISIS for its literal reading of the Quran, mostly justifies what they're doing. A case might be made that the greatest head shopper of all was Muhammad himself, which is why Al-Azhar has nothing to say and makes of itself a barbaric religion. And in this war for civilization, attacked by barbarians, one bottom line component is the war for sanity over insanity, the denial of reality and truth. This is one facet of the war against Israel in our time. For example, UNESCO voted on language last month, denying the historical connection between the Jewish people and Jerusalem. This is a form of madness, I think. For 14 centuries, the Muslims boasted ownership of the Temple Mount because they agreed it was the Temple Mount of the Jews that they had captured from the Jews, which is proof that Allah loves Muslims more than Jews now. They have the covenant. Jews lost theirs. And this is proof. But then, in the year 2000, Arafat denied the history of the two temples. And since then, it has become Muslim orthodoxy. You don't like the past? Deny it ever happened. For 40 years, the leader of the Arabs in Jerusalem, Khaja Amin al-Husseini, after World War I, said there was no such country as Palestine, and he was right. The Muslims had no map in their heads of this country called Palestine, as they call it today. There's no mention of Palestine in the Quran. Today, they claim to be the putatively prehistoric Palestinians, living here since the beginning of time, until the Jews, after World War II, invaded and stole their country from them. This, too, is madness. It was madness when Hitler ranted in German beer halls in the 1920s that Germany had lost the war because the Jews had stabbed Germany in the back. That was a lie. And so is the entirety of Palestinian nationalism. It is one humongous lie about history. One lie after another, for sure. The Arab accusation today, joined by other Jew haters like Ken Livingston, they called Jews Nazis. This is another lie. And no healthy community can live by lies. Last week, Ynet reported on the attempt by an Arab documentary filmmaker to make a film about the Munich Olympic Games massacre from the Palestinian point of view. He approached Ilana Romano, widow of Yosef, the weightlifter, whom we recently learned was, when tied up as a hostage, castrated by these barbarians. Ilana, of course, spurned the request because the filmmaker called the barbarians who orchestrated that horror freedom fighters instead of terrorists. In this, the war against Israel, by principally the Muslims, but also with their anti-Jew backers in the West, what's at stake is a civilized morality, civilized human morality, versus the horrors of these living, fossil, pagan savages with the morality of man before the Great Flood. So at the UN, the PLO mouthpiece called a press conference to denounce Israel for labeling legitimate Palestinian resistance to an occupying power terrorism. He said that's no good. And in fact, over four decades now, and counting, the UN as a body has never been able to agree on a definition of terrorism because the Muslims, the largest bloc, refuse to include what they do to the Jews as terrorism. In their ethical universe, they have the right to do to us whatever they want. And further to this, whenever the Jews hit back, whenever we arrest a terrorist, kill a terrorist, they have no right. We have no right to do that. Jewish self-defense is illegal because the Jewish presence is illegal in their minds. There's an abyss, an unbridgeable chasm, separating Judeo-Christian civilization and Arab-Muslim culture. Like mixing oil and water, they don't mix. This is why Muslims should never have been allowed to establish themselves in the West, to build mosques, etc. Islam is a polygamous culture, and the ramifications for society of that, as a whole, are immense and overwhelmingly negative. These people live in an intellectual world in which, one can say, they have no fidelity to truth. They say that Israelis act like Nazis toward Palestinians. They deny, after 14 centuries of bragging the Temple Mount was in their hands, that now it's not. It was not in their hands. They turn on a dime and declare the Jews never had any temples on Haram al-Sharif, what they call the noble enclosure. With people like this, the idea of writing a peace treaty and expecting them to abide, Oslo was lunacy. Arafat, and Abbas, and friends were up to their armpits in warm, innocent, butchered Jewish blood, and only the leftist blockheads like Peres and Balin and Rabin believed it was possible to go into business with such people. Yeah, the fashion of public, open, and shameless Jew hatred has returned to the public square in a way we have not seen in 70 years. At Harvard Law School the other day, during a panel discussion, an Arab dissembler and or historic illiterate, one Hussam al-Kula, claiming to be a Palestinian, even though I'm sure there's nothing Palestinian about him, he addressed a former Israeli ministress, Tzipi Livner, and called her smelly. And when protests arose against him for his rudeness, 11 Harvard Law students wrote a letter backing him, some Jews among them for sure. They said he had become the victim of a vicious smear campaign, and by implication, he had every right to call Tzipi Livni smelly. He and his defenders claim that he was ignorant of the centuries-old canard that Jews have a vile smell about them. But no matter. He himself exposed himself to be on the same plane, intellectually and spiritually, as those in generations past who would call out a dirty Jew. It is the response of a barbarian who has neither facts nor logic to defend his warped interpretation of reality and history. And that there are Jews among his backers at Harvard Law should not surprise. They're everywhere. On every campus, one imagines, there are Jews who have jumped ship, so to speak, and joined the anti-Jews in their delusional accusations flung at Israel. I think one of the neglected facts of the or facets of the leftist character and its structure accounts for the behavior which I consider to be cowardly. I think many of these anti-Israel assimilated Jews are just terribly frightened people by the rising tide of Jew hatred and escape the threat by crossing over to the Jew killer's side to cheer them on as a form of self-defense. They cheer on such as the new head of the National Union of Students in the UK, a Muslim woman from Algeria who shamelessly cheers on the murder of Jews, Jews at random in Israel in the name of resisting the occupation, a.k.a. the armed struggle, a.k.a. freedom fighting. Barbarians have no conception of a civilized person's horror at Islam's acts of terror. For Muslim barbarians like her, anything goes against your enemy, and there's nothing wrong with that. Of course, she says that her people are just resisting the occupation, but of course, even before 1967, the Arabs in Judea and Samaria were murdering Jews at random, too. Like the hundreds killed in the so-called Arab Revolt in mandatory Palestine in the 1930s. Since the Arabs in those years, 1936 to 39, denied there was such a country as Palestine that had been brought back to life by the League of Nations, which decision they vigorously opposed to the point of murder, in those 3 years, it was called the Arab Revolt because the locals did not yet claim to be Palestinians. That anti-Semitic fantasy had yet to be sucked out of a water pipe packed with killer hash. But I digress. The two worst cases of this terrible flight from Jewishness into the arms of the enemy so far are the case of this Simone Zimmerman, who worked for Bernie Sanders. She got to Berkeley in 2009, a committed lover of Israel, but within a year, in some kind of hysterical transformation, she became a J Street leader and fell in step with the BDS movement. Worse, in a worse case, an Israeli shlichai, a Jewish agency representative, working through the Hillel House at Berkeley. She was raised in a Dati Lumi, national religious home. She was so influenced by the atmosphere in Hillel. She returned to Israel, went to Ramallah, converted to Islam, and married an Arabian. This kind of flip-flop overnight is less the sign of seeing the light than succumbing to outside pressures, including the rising tide of Jew hatred. At Berkeley, it is, of course, this hatred in full bloom via hating Israel as a substitute for hating Jews. In the past, it was for killing Jesus. That's old hat. In every generation, there has always been a good reason. The accusation of committing a monstrous crime. This allows pestering, plaguing, harassing, murdering the Jews. And the current one is the fairy tale saga of the ancient Palestinians who had their ancient homeland stolen from them by the perfidious evil Jews. Only now, the agent of these acts of apostasy on these campuses is the Hillel House, functionally an arm of the reform movement, so this should not surprise. These reformed so-called Jews are so far off the rails, the Jewish rails of history, they're lost to the Jewish people. Like these two unfortunate girls. What a toxic atmosphere it must be in the Berkeley Hillel House and every Hillel House on campuses today. Anti-Semitism is erupting again, like an unpredictable volcano, only this time with the really weird twist of Jew haters denying they're Jew haters. That's never happened before. It's just the Zionists they don't like, they say. They don't support the Zionist state, and they judge the Zionists to be evildoers, but not all Jews. It's like saying we've got nothing against the people in the United States and Canada. It's those damn North Americans I can't stand. This is a thought twisted and wrung out until it has no meaning anymore. Peter Beinart once protested in his column that anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism are not the same. And I say only a fool in denial like him thinks that, plays that word game in their heads. Zionism has been the movement to create a Jewish minority state in the Jewish people's historic homeland. For everywhere they lived for thousands of years, outside of it, they were in the minority and subject to abuse in varying degrees of magnitude. Those who say they're not anti-Semites, only anti-Zionists, say the Jews have no right to become a self-governing majority. They must remain a minority and bear the burdens of that status. It's a word game when people say, I'm not an anti-Semite, only against the state of Israel. That has no right to exist. What may also be at work, which surely is at work, is the hand of God, who has a record of allowing anti-Semitic hatred to well up whenever the Jews get too comfortable among the Gentiles and assimilate out via intermarriage. Read the books of Ezra and Nehemiah about the problem. Remember that preceding the Nazi Holocaust, there was a century of mass conversions in Germany, against which, ironically, Reform Judaism was created to stop. Once again, it seems, though, anti-Jew words are back in fashion in public, and once again a major facet of the non-Orthodox Jews in the West assimilating out at the speed of light is before us. I think cowardice is a major motivation for these people. You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. Well, I must say that I read the transcript of Donald Trump's foreign policy speech last week, his first scripted speech, and I confess I agreed with everything he said. And as I listened, I was wondering who wrote this speech. It could have been written by John Bolton. I wasn't expecting such a speech, and that's because I have focused on the domestic side of Donald Trump, and I've been no fan of that. I find him vulgar. He's no conservative on social issues. I find his attacks on his opponents ugly. But when it comes to foreign affairs, with many saying he had no competence in these matters, I was more than surprised. If these sentences reflect his views, he's got my vote. He spoke the truth about Obama. That was right on target. He said about him, he dislikes our friends and bows to our enemies, something we have never seen before in the history of our country. He has treated Iran with tender, loving care and made it a great power. He has not been a friend to Israel. If President Obama's goal had been to weaken America, he could not have done a better job, close quote. Above all, I like the following, quote, I will work with our allies to reinvigorate Western values and institutions instead of trying to spread universal values that not everybody shares or wants. We should understand that strengthening and promoting Western civilization and its accomplishments will do more to inspire positive reforms around the world than military interventions. Close quote. Bravo. A recognition that the U.S. cannot be in the business of nation building. That was the fatal error of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. The aspiration to repel an enemy and build a bulwark against him by teaching the Muslims in both countries how to run a Western-style liberal democracy is a fool's game. America was at its finest in invading Iraq to bring down Saddam, a true monster to his people, but began its descent to America at its worst by sticking around and trying to create a friendly democracy in its place. Immediately after capturing him, the U.S. should have hightailed it out of that country and left the locals to pick up the pieces. Overall, then, I thought Trump's foreign policy speech was a major breath of fresh air after 8 years of this Muslim communist and his nefarious machinations. In 2012 at the UN, he said he did not want a world in which it was okay to slander the prophet of Islam. And so 2 years later, when Charlie Hebdo's staffers were all murdered for ridiculing the prophet, Obama refused to participate in the mass demonstration, sending a message that he was on the side of those who did the killing in the matter of insulting the prophet. He's also still bent on not only closing Guantanamo as a prison for Muslim terrorists, that's an expression he refuses to use, but also, I think, the entire installation and return it all to Cuba after more than a century in American hands. And then Cuba can lease it out to the Russians or the Iranians. He'd like that, I'm sure. So, on foreign policy, I will have no trouble voting for Donald Trump, assuming he wins the nomination. But his domestic politics and sharp contrast scare me. Thus far, he seems to be on the side of the mentally disordered, who think so-called transgender people can use whatever public toilet they choose. Historian Ken Spiro, in his book World Perfect, made the case, and he was not the first, that the two great empires of antiquity, Greece and Rome, both sunk beneath the waves of history because they became sexually degenerate. A fine word, that, degenerate, which is now painfully out of fashion. It literally refers to the reality that sexual deviants addicted to their perversions do not reproduce. They don't generate the next generation. They are into a non-generative mode of existence, a degenerate mode. It was madness last summer when the U.S. Supreme Court threw holy water on men marrying men and women marrying women. In both cases, neither union can result in the birth of a newborn baby. For both, strip the pleasure of conjugal relations from its principal purpose, which is making babies and producing the next generation. It's no coincidence that three of the five U.S. Supreme Court judges who voted for this abomination are de-Judaized Jews. Shame on them and shame on the Jewish people. Okay, that's it for this first night of the week, first after Passover and my year-long break. We're back in the groove starting this week. I'll be back, God willing, on Tuesday. Until then, Laila Tov, Me'eretz Yisrael.